You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Andre whā oso toko ingoa. Nau mai haere mai ki te wai mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rāpa Wednesday, everybody. I'm your host, Andre, and I'll be with you for the next hour. E whā kēnei, coming up on the show. I speak to Professor Boyd Swinburne, co-chair of Health Coalition Aotearoa, about political parties' positions on tobacco, alcohol and unhealthy food policies and how they should weigh in on voters' decision-making come election day. I also speak to Joe Carolyn about a Tax the Rich protest that is being held in Tāmaki Makaurau next Saturday. Arno, who do you speak to?
I speak to Greater Auckland's Matt Lowry about the new State of the City report, as well as Sarah Helm from the NZ Drug Foundation about laced MDMA in the Hawke's Bay area.
Thank you for that, Arno. Nicholas, who do you speak with today?
I spoke to Jessica Walker from Consumer New Zealand about new unit pricing regulations for supermarkets.
Thank you for that, Nicholas. He aha o whakaaro, I'd love to hear your thoughts on any of the pieces that come up on the show today. So get in touch, tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395, or why might I make us a call in studio on 09309 3879. Kaua e ware ware e a hei ana koutou te whakarongo ki ēnei kōrero anō he Pākihere, roki roki mārunga i te pai tukutuku o irirangi poho, me haere ki 95BFM, irakati.com. You can catch all these pieces on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Now let's get into the Wednesday Wire.
Say this, Betelgeuse star?
You're not a child of the 80s. If you were, you would know the film with a similar name. The star is Betelgeuse.
Oh!
Yeah.
The Wire.
Yesterday in Wellington, Health Coalition Aotearoa held a forum for political parties to front their health policies over tobacco, alcohol and unhealthy food. Political parties present at the forum were Labour's Ayesha Verrall, the Greens' Chloe Swarbrick and National's Shane Retty to share their party's policy positions. To talk more about how important parties' health policies are in voters' decision-making in the upcoming election, I spoke to Professor Boyd Swinburne, co-chair of Health Coalition Aotearoa. Professor Boyd, how did you come about the findings in this report?
Health Coalition Aotearoa has put out what we call the prevention brief, which is the priority areas that we see as important for the next government to implement if they want to reduce the huge damage caused to health by tobacco, alcohol and unhealthy food. So those three unhealthy products create about one third of our loss of health, our annual loss of health every year. That's premature death and disability. So this is a huge piece of our health, and there are policies which can be implemented, and the Health Coalition has put those out as priorities, and we sought to get the feedback from the political parties about whether they would support or not support these policies.
Have you noticed any distinct changes in the party's health policies?
Well, I think the only party that can claim any changes of action is the one that's in government at the moment, because they've got the levers of power. So there are quite a few things happening within health under a Labor government, and in particular on the prevention side, the smoke-free legislation, which has been implemented and will take effect over the coming years, is really world-leading. That is just fantastic. It is taking a very strong pro-health and pro-equity stance, and I think that New Zealand will now lead the world to get to smoke-free. What we really want to see is that same approach applied to alcohol and unhealthy food, which also cause huge problems with our health.
So in regard to tobacco, alcohol and unhealthy food, where do the parties sit in terms of the policies that they're fronting in the upcoming election?
So we put our 12 policy priorities to each of the parties and asked them on a spectrum from highly supportive to not supportive at all, where they sat with each of those. And what was astounding to me when you put all the results together was this fell out completely along ideological lines. So these policy priorities that we developed were based on evidence, they're based on World Health Organization recommendations, they're based on expert input from New Zealand and internationally. And so these are evidence-based, expert-agreed recommendations. And parties on the left, Te Pāti Māori, Green Party, in particular, were highly supportive of all of those. And the parties on the right, especially ACT, were completely unsupportive of the policies. National and Labor were a bit mixed in the middle. But yeah, the distribution was right along party lines. And it got me thinking, you know, if parties like ACT want to do something about prevention, they're prepared to put aside all of the evidence and recommendations from the World Health Organization, from the evidence, from experts, what are they going to do about prevention? They're just going to say it's everybody's individual responsibility and leave it as it is. That's no solution that anybody is recommending.
You said that Labor and National were somewhat mixed. Do you think that their health plans or proposals have changed or remained relatively unchanged, especially as we get into this new election cycle?
Well, I think the Nationals is probably relatively unchanged. They have a bit of difficulty in the alcohol space, actually, as does Labor, in working out how to be strong and reduce the huge damage from alcohol and how to fight off this very strong alcohol lobby. The same is true also for unhealthy food. So most of these policies are around restricting access. So for alcohol, for example, there's lots of cheap outlets in poorer neighbourhoods. They're just flooded. Same with fast food outlets. It's around marketing, and especially with junk food targeting kids, that we want to see regulations around. And then it's about pricing. So for alcohol, it's alcohol taxes or lifting the minimum price, sugary drinks tax, those sorts of things. Those are the main strategies. And the government, especially Labor and National, are relatively reluctant to use those strong and powerful policy tools like taxation and regulation because they know they have to do battle with the very powerful lobby groups from alcohol and food. And so we really want to fortify them to show that's where the evidence is and that's what people want. They want a healthier, safer environment from all of the harm that alcohol and unhealthy food creates.
Lastly, how do you think these policies should be considered in voters' decision-making in the upcoming election?
Voters typically put health pretty high on their list of what they want. I know there's cost of living issues and things as well, but I think if people are really interested in health and really interested in prevention, then I think the Te Pāti Māori and the Greens Party offer the strongest place to put your vote.
That was Professor Boyd Swinburne, co-chair of Health Coalition Aotearoa, talking to me about political parties, tobacco, alcohol and unhealthy food policies.
The Wire. Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
A recent report called State of the City examines Auckland City in a global context, comparing it to developed cities in other countries. The report draws both comparisons and highlights potential areas of improvement for the city. The report was commissioned by the Committee for Auckland in partnership with Deloitte and Auckland Council's economic and cultural agency Tataki Auckland Unlimited. I spoke with Greater Auckland editor Matt Lowry to find out more about the findings in the report. I started by asking Matt how he viewed Auckland prior to reading the report.
I think Auckland has always done really well in its natural environment. So we have one of the best settings for a city in the world. That is, you know, we've got a fantastic harbour, we've got the Hauraki Gulf, we've got the Waitakere Ranges, we've got fantastic beaches. But what that means is that often when we think about how our city is designed, we've let the built environment suffer or not be as live up to its expectations. And other cities, particularly those that are more inland, you know, on rivers, for example, have to do a lot more to make their cities attractive and look fantastic. You know, those are many of the cities that we admire the most when we travel around because they're built in places that are that require them to make them fantastic cities to be in rather than just relying or falling back on their natural environment to support themselves.
Did you learn anything new from the report, or did you know it already?
Well, I think that we've known this already for a long time, and we've seen many of these kinds of reports in the past looking at that ranked cities, and often that the area that Auckland falls down on is its infrastructure and its built environment. And so if we really want to make Auckland succeed, we have to make the city actually a city and have some build better infrastructure. We need to have more options for people and have a denser, more interesting city to live in.
I saw you wrote an article about National's transport plan. Is that anything new in that plan, or is it par for the course?
Well, it is par for the course, and a lot of it is rehashing old plans that have been cancelled or discredited. And so National's plan is about focusing on putting a lot of roads and what actually Aucklanders have said they want, and what we need to succeed in terms of our standings compared to other cities is we really need good quality public transport options and good quality walking and cycling options, so that people actually have a choice about how they get around, so they're not having to be stuck in traffic. One of the problems with building more roads is it actually creates more congestion, and it means that there's more people stuck behind the wheel, that more people have no option but to drive, and people get very frustrated at having to do that a lot of the time. And so there are a lot of people out there who would quite happily choose to use public transport if they had the option available to them that was a real, that would get them to where they wanted to go in a realistic time frame. And we see that where we've invested in public transport and walking and cycling, people have flocked to use it in large numbers. And if we roll that out to more places in Auckland, we would see similar outcomes. And that's the same sort of outcomes we see in every other city around the world.
How does Auckland's transport system compare to other modern cities?
Well, like I think many sort of more modern, newer cities, and particularly in the Anglosphere, so Canada, the US, Australia, Auckland has relied heavily on building roads to address movement. And what we see is that the outcome of that is a lot of congestion, a lot of emissions that come from cars, because we have a very high number of cars on the road. And it means that we're often, while that can be quick at some times, it can also be really unreliable at times. A single crash can cause sometimes the entire motorway network or the entire road network to grind to a halt. So we become incredibly reliant on that one mode of getting around, which means that without the options, we get stuck in traffic, and we get stuck in buses get stuck because there's not the reliability for them to get around those issues either.
Now, you've already touched on this, but what does Auckland need to do to improve its livability, in your view?
Well, I think we need a much stronger focus on getting public transport working well, and that means getting it reliable and free from traffic. So that means more bus lanes, more light rail, particularly on the surface, rather than spending lots of money on tunnels. It means more frequency, more coverage, so going to more places, so that you've got better options for how you get around. So we need a lot of investment there. We need a lot of investment in making it just easy and safe to cycle. A lot of people would be really happy to cycle around the city or walk around the city and around the region if it was safe to do so. And in many places where we've built that, and like things like the Northwestern Cycleway and some of the cycleways around the city, we're seeing huge growth in people using them. But most people just don't, or can't, either can't get to it safely, and so they don't want to ride, or they can't get to where they want to go safely. So getting that safety in place is actually really critical. And that some of that will require some tough conversations about how we use our road space.
How well does the government work with the council to deliver projects? Do you have any insight into this?
I think very poorly. What we see is the government have their views as to what it should be, and they sort of dictate down to the council. That's something that we have a lot of problems with, because we see outcomes like we're seeing with both major parties sort of presenting these big plans from above of what we're going to do to build Auckland, and often without a lot of Auckland involvement in some of these. And so the government have a role to play, and there are areas where they need to be involved more and areas where they need to be involved less and letting Auckland get on with it. I think what the focus should be is on how the government can enable Auckland Transport to deliver more things. And that means Auckland Transport has been pretty poor at delivering outcomes for Aucklanders. They're very slow, it's taken a long time, and often at a very high cost to do it. the government should be focusing on how they can get Auckland Transport working better, and that's also for Auckland's challenge as well, and then pushing more of that decision-making onto Auckland rather than sort of coming in and dropping this infrastructure from above effectively.
Finally, are there any new projects in Auckland that you're excited about?
There are a lot of projects I'm excited about, but none that are probably necessary on the agenda right now. There's a lot of opportunity for Auckland to do really, really well, and that could be rolling out light rail on the surface rather than the current plans, walking and cycling connections. There are some really exciting things that we could be doing in these spaces, and it would actually really help people get around. And I think the big things that sort of really quick wins that we could see is really improving, for example, bus priority. Where bus lanes exist, they're fantastic, but they often don't run long enough or they stop at intersections and buses get caught up in those locations. So things like that could be really, while they're unsexy sometimes, they could be really powerful in helping really change how Aucklanders get around and making public transport much more reliable.
That was Greater Auckland editor Matt Lowry on the State of the City report.
You're listening to The Wire on 95 BFM. We'll be right back after this.
95 BFM has returned to the rave and popped out the cutest little rave baby the station has ever seen. Say hello to the world, B-Rave.
B-Rave, 25th of August at The Mothership, presented by Lord of the Fries and 95 BFM.
Featuring the hottest lineup of DJs from 6 collectives and labels across Aotearoa. Monogamy, Kieran Tahir, Birkenfart, Karu, Hashi DJ, Left Hand Lars. Expect anything and everything from the hottest jungle to the weirdest hyperpop.
B-Rave at the Mothership, Friday, August 25th. Tickets available now at Under the Radar.
Shotties, Lord of the Fries, eat like you give a fuck.
What's a 7-letter word for street fighter?
Brawler.
You're right. Hey, what's happening at Ponsonby Social Club this week?
Well, tonight there's
Botico Beats with Juliana Sion, Amanda Bovo, Timothy Nolia, and guests with support from DJ Bobby Brazuka.
And tomorrow,
DJs Katya and Lenski.
Same old Ponsonby Social Club, 152 Ponsonby Road.
We're at a dinner table in a flat.
All right, help yourself.
What's in this?
Why? What do you mean? It's good for you.
Yeah, no, it's just it tastes a bit like electro swing.
Well, it's not. I seasoned it with a little upright bass, and we had leftover jazz vocal.
Look, I'm getting takeout.
What's cooking?
Every Wednesday evening, 95 BFM Drive is joined by a very special guest for great chat about extremely savoury tunes.
What's cooking?
Supported by Auckland Art Gallery Toi O Tāmaki. Become a member today for great art benefits.
BFM.
Should make a move on. And if I don't let you know, then I won't be for real. I could be wrong, but feel like something could be going on.
The more I see you, the more that becomes so true.
There ain't no
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95 BFM. Now it's time for a piece from Nicholas.
The government has indicated
The Wire.
Last week, the government announced new regulations aimed at making supermarket prices clearer for consumers. The regulations mean that products will have to be displayed with a consistent unit, making it easier to distinguish which products are cheaper. I spoke to Consumer New Zealand's Jessica Walker about these new regulations, as well as the campaign to rid New Zealand supermarkets of, quote, dodgy supermarket specials.
So the regulation that's recently passed means that supermarkets over a certain size have to incorporate unit pricing in their stores. What that means is when you're looking at an item, you see not only the total cost of the product, but how much it is, say, it will be different per product type. It could be per 100 grams or per 100 millilitres, and that lets you as the consumer make an informed decision. So just because something is bigger doesn't necessarily mean it's better value. So if it's being rolled out consistently across all the main supermarkets, you'll be able to see whether a product on special or maybe not even on special is actually as good a deal as you would hope it is. So this is something that is in place in other countries. We're quite far behind, unfortunately, with getting this out there. And although it was passed very recently, the stores have got up to a year to actually implement this in the shops. And so all stores have to comply by the end of August next year. You know, they're still a year away, so you might not see any changes on your shelves anytime soon.
I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on some of the benefits of these new regulations for consumers.
Absolutely. So the benefit of unit pricing is that everybody who goes into the shop can see exactly how much something, the value of something, I suppose. So by breaking it down into the price per unit rather than a total cost, you can look at, say, you've got five different brands of mayonnaise on the shelf. And it might be that the smallest one looks the cheapest, and obviously the biggest one's the most expensive. But when you look at the unit price, you might find that actually the bigger one works out much cheaper because, say, it's, I don't know, 20 cents per 100 mil, whereas the smaller one would be 50 cents per 100 mil. And so you can see right there without having to get your phone out and do the math that's going to be your saving. And what they found in Australia when they rolled this out is that 11% of people were making savings on their grocery bill as soon as this unit pricing was rolled out, because people could make really informed choices and see where they would get the best value for their money, the best bang for the buck, if you like.
And that's great, because it also, I guess, it increases competition that way when values are made so much easier to see and process.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. So that, you know, when retailers can compare their unit prices with another, it should force them or hopefully encourage them to sharpen their prices, because, you know, they all want to have this competitive edge, and it's going to be a much easier and clearer way of seeing what the actual breakdown cost of certain products is at each store. So it should really work in the benefit of consumers, but we've just got to wait and see if it plays out the way we hope it's going to.
And yeah, Consumer New Zealand has launched a campaign to rid New Zealand of quote-unquote dodgy supermarket specials.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask, how will these new regulations help combat dodgy supermarket specials? And what are some other tactics consumers should be aware of in supermarkets?
That is a great question. So if the unit pricing is rolled out properly, and if consumers will take the time to look at the labels, which we really hope and encourage people to do, it should kind of stop the dodgy specials, because you're not just seeing the great big labels say special or low value or everyday value. You can actually figure out the value of each particular product. So, you know, we just have to wait and see. And that's something else that we're a little bit concerned about. And hopefully, I think the law will be clear that this can't be in teeny tiny font to the bottom right hand of the ticket. You know, it should be really prominent and clear how much these things cost per unit. So once that's in place, it should mean that when you go to your shopping, you know, you might have a list and you can tick it off and you can see how much all of these different products are costing. And that should kind of, well, we hope it will negate the lure on the pull that some of these specials have. Because right now what we know is that so many New Zealanders shop by special, which is understandable, you know, in this cost of living crisis where every dollar counts. Of course, you're going to reach for something that looks like it's on special. But what we've found since we started asking for people to share examples with us in September last year, we've had over 600 people get in touch with really great evidence where they thought they were going to pay a particular price, and when they got to the till, it was more, or a special tag, and they lift it up, and actually the special price is more expensive than the everyday price that's hidden underneath it. We've also seen dodgy multi-buys where people have bought, say, three packets of biscuits for $6, but then if you look in the small print, they're only $1.50 each. So there's all these kinds of tips and tricks that you really need to look out for. And, you know, it's hard right now. People are really, really trying to save money, and we're worried that these things that are going on are making us spend more than we really need to. So that was the real driving force behind our campaign. We have just submitted our evidence gathered throughout the month of June. So that was 80 examples to the Commerce Commission, and that's the Commerce Commission to investigate the supermarkets. We hope it will.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one too, because I guess the government just instated a new grocery commissioner as well. So I think there's a lot of excitement. I say excitement, yeah, but it's not really excitement around what's happening in the supermarket sector and potentially getting to be more equitable.
Yeah, I think hope is probably the right word. You know, with these changes, things like the unit pricing being rolled out and the covenants and the fact that we do have this new grocery commissioner, I think, you know, this is intended to make it fairer for all New Zealanders, and we really hope that is the case. But we're going to keep an eye on it. So just because we've got this grocery commissioner, we don't think, okay, that's our job done. We're still really keen to keep our eyes and ears out and find out what's really happening for people in the shops, because, you know, we know these supermarkets are making eye-watering profits, some of them. And when people are having to put things back when they go through the shopping because they can't afford to pay for it, or, you know, we've heard from people who are having to go without food on a daily basis because they can't afford it, it's just something's got to change. We are hopeful, we remain hopeful, but we really hope to do some changes very soon.
I know that Consumer New Zealand is also a pragmatic organisation, so I wanted to ask if there's any further recommendations, or if there's any policies that you guys have thought of that would help the supermarket sector in terms of getting fairer prices for consumers?
Again, that's a great question. We think the huge problem that New Zealand faces is the lack of competition. You know, that's not something that can be solved overnight, and that's a huge issue to overcome. But we would really love to see more competition in the sector. Things like Snoopy, you know, where this online store, which I believe is starting to expand outside of Auckland, I mean, that's a great initiative, and we hope that that's going to lead to lower prices because people will have more alternatives. You know, we're very mindful that some people have got no choice but to shop at one particular supermarket because it's the only one they can get to. And when that's the case, it's really hard to kind of, I guess, enforce change. So we believe it is going to be a slow process, but we are, this is something that we will be keeping a very close eye on.
I was also wondering, this is just a bit of a side question, but I was wondering if Consumer New Zealand has been in contact with the new grocery commissioner, or if there's been any, you know, communication between you and the new commission.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's been for a chat with our chief executive. The rest of the team haven't met him yet, but I understand that was a good first meeting. We're really hopeful that he's going to be doing exactly what he says and shining a light on what's happening in the supermarket, because more evidence we've got, you know, hopefully it means that there will be change, or at least we'll have a really good case for saying that things need to change, because right now, since that market study that was done, I can't even remember how long ago, but it's a fair while ago now, you know, the more evidence we've got, the better. It helps people make informed decision making, and if far more regulations are needed, then that evidence will really help to ensure that they're robust and lead to good things for New Zealand consumers.
That was Consumer New Zealand's Jessica Walker talking about new unit pricing regulations for supermarkets.
What's his title? Guy in charge, Dr. Ashley Broom.
The Director General of Health.
Yeah.
The Wire.
In the upcoming election, there have been many discussions on all sides in regard to tax policy. A News Hub Read research poll in May found that a majority of Kiwis support implementing a wealth tax, although Labor, National and ACT have been reluctant to touch the subject, with Labor still making no major tax reform announcements in the run-up to the election. Unions in Tāmaki Makaurau have become vocal and have organised a protest advocating for tax reform targeted at New Zealand's wealthiest. To talk more about the protest that is happening next week, I spoke to protest organiser with Unite Union, Joe Carolyn.
What are some of the organisations that are endorsing this event?
Well, look, there's a huge amount of people that think that there's a
a huge gap between wealth and poor in New Zealand, that workers are paying most of the tax. Our services are starting to crumble in education, in health. We don't have what other generations have. The boomers had free education. This generation has to pay. The boomers had affordable housing. Rent is impossible to pay for a lot of workers, paying over half their income in rent. So this has got to stop. And this crisis kind of began when the neoliberal revolution happened in the 80s and 90s, and the rich stopped paying their fair share of tax. So there's quite a lot of groups going to be supporting. We've got Unions Auckland, First Union, the PPTA, the Migrant Workers Association, Green Party, Auckland Action Against Poverty, Renters United, Action Station, and System Change, Not Climate Change, the group that's organising.
What is the intention behind the rally?
I think it's to inject some fire into the left. I mean, it seems to be that Labour is playing quite a defensive game, and unless we get out and attack, we're going to have the most right-wing government in New Zealand's history in October, where the dog of national will be wagged by the tail of the ACT Party. The ACT Party carried out a revolution in the late 80s, early 90s in New Zealand, bringing neoliberalism to this country, along with Labour, actually, that they infiltrated. And so people want to take action about this.
How do you think people feel about the current government's tax policies?
I think there's a feeling that the transformative change that Jacinda Ardern was offering has been lost. And so even within the Labour Party itself, there seems to be quite a lot of anger at Chris Hipkins kind of unilaterally declaring that there would be no wealth tax when he's in charge. I mean, this was a call that Jacinda made herself personally around the CGT, the capital gains tax. So it seems to be that a lot of people are wondering just what is the point of these parties if they won't help the working class, if they won't help renters, if they won't help students. And people are looking to more radical alternatives like the Greens and Te Pāti Māori.
What change do you think needs to be implemented then in order to gain more support?
Well, I think hundreds of people will start taking to the streets around these issues. And the Tax the Rich March is kind of a beginning of a process of bringing a coalition together that wants to see a radical transformative change in New Zealand. And it's not just because we can't afford houses, we can't afford to pay the rent, that the cost of food is spiraling out of control. But people also know that we've only got, 10 years at most to take radical action to stop climate change. And this is not the time to play defensive games or be apologetic about taxing the rich, who are the source of all these crises.
How many do you expect to attend the event next Saturday?
Oh, well, we've got the Facebook event out, so there's a few hundred already. So if people can go and share the event, Tax the Rich from System Change, let's everybody try and get as many people as possible.
Could you just explain a little bit more information about the event?
Yes, so it's the Tax the Rich March. It's organised by System Change, Not Climate Change, supported by the Green Party, Auckland Action Against Poverty, Migrant Workers Association, First Union, PPTA, Action Station, and the Green Party. And it's on Saturday, the 19th of August, 2 p.m. at Brito Mart Square. Bring your flags. Bring your friends.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that, Joe.
If you want to say things yourself, introduce to me, you can say that the 311 wealthiest families in Aotearoa own as much wealth as the bottom 50% of the population. And the News Hub poll in May showed 53% of New Zealanders support a wealth tax, with only 35% opposed. So it's a very popular policy.
Why do you think there's such hesitance, considering that such a small number of the population is going to be truly affected by any form of tax reform?
I think it's because that small population are the ones who control society. They control wealth. They own the media. Therefore, anything that challenges their power, their wealth and their privilege will be marginalised, sidelined or sabotaged.
That was Jo Carolyn talking to me about the Tax the Rich protest happening next Saturday in Britomart Square and about the issue of tax and the run-up to the election in October. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. We'll be right back after this.
To see a world in a grain of coffee and a heaven in a perfect roast. Hold infinity in the mug in your hand and eternity in every gulp.
Atomic Coffee. Each bean is a world of its own, and when they are blended together expertly by the Atomic team, they create a divinely good coffee.
Atomic Coffee, available at The Roastery in Kingsland and three bustling espresso bars in central Auckland.
Or get your fix online at atomiccoffee.co.nz.
Join the Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra for Carnival of the Animals at the Auckland Town Hall, August 12th.
Get ready for a zany zoological adventure with Auckland's favourite high-energy comedy dance troupe, Dynamotion, putting on a fresh and fun performance of Saint-Saëns' musical Menagerie, featuring Chris Parker, Alice Canton and Tom Sainsbury.
The Auckland Philharmonia Orchestra, Carnival of the Animals at the Auckland Town Hall, Saturday, August 12th, 11:30 a.m. and 2 p.m. For tickets and more info, go to apo.co.nz.
Ah, good day, Frank.
Yeah, it's high tide now as well, so yeah.
What is it? Was this 3 foot, is it?
Yeah, at least. So yeah.
Is it onshore? Yeah, onshore's a good one, eh?
Yeah,
cool, yeah.
Oh. Here comes a good one.
You get it.
No, it's okay. You go for it.
No, I insist.
Okay. Oh, damn, I missed it.
No, that was close, though. You did really well.
Thank you. Actually, I might head in. My board doesn't feel properly waxed.
Yeah, I think I'll join you. It's getting a bit messy out here now, anyway.
Yeah, so we're just going to get a flat white.
The 95BFM Surf Report. All the surf, all the time. Weekdays on Breakfast and Drive. Thanks to Pro Gear Photographic. 95BFM.
Radio B.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. Be sure to get in touch. Tuku pātuhi mai. Text it on 5395. Or why might Ane give us a call in studio on 09309 3879 and share your perspective on the pieces that have been on the show so far.
And it is odd for somebody to pay you $100 for a photo of your feet. That is not normal behaviour.
The Wire.
Recent drugs misrepresented as pure MDMA have caused hospitalizations in the Hawke's Bay region, with four men admitted and two in critical condition. I spoke to the NZ Drug Foundation's executive director, Sarah Halp, to find out more.
Oh, well, actually, it's important to clarify that, first of all, we're not sure yet. We're waiting for confirmatory testing. Not necessarily that it was adulterated or laced. It potentially didn't have MDMA in it or a lot of it at all. But the really important thing people need to know is that it could have been dimethylpentylone, which is a synthetic cathinone that can have very unpleasant effects, but it could also have been a range of other things. So we're waiting for confirmatory testing from ESR on that.
Have there been any historical reports of the same substance lacing or being represented as MDMA?
Dimethylpentylone, if indeed that's what the substance turns out to be, is a newer synthetic cathinone. So we've had synthetic cathinones being represented as MDMA for quite some time. There was one a while back called Utalone. So it's not new to New Zealand, although it is relatively recent. It's been in the last couple of years. It's become the main substance that has been adulterated or presented as MDMA falsely around the world in recent times. It is a relatively new drug, so in a sense we don't know a lot about it, but we do know, first of all, that you can't tell visually whether it's MDMA or dimethylpentylone. It might feel like MDMA to start with, but if it is indeed this drug, it will wear off relatively quickly and might cause you to want to take some more, and that's where you will end up in trouble later on. You might feel anxious, agitated, paranoid, etc.
Would you say MDMA has risen in purity or has it dropped in recent times?
the availability, well, a recent report earlier this week suggested that MDMA has become less available domestically. I haven't seen any other evidence to confirm that, but nonetheless, we should always be aware that because our drugs are left to the illegal market, we never really know what we're taking unless we get our drugs checked. And we do have drug checking, particularly for your people listening in Auckland, tomorrow, 3 to 7pm at Albert Park, and one on Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 at Neck of the Woods on K Road.
Does your testing only test for the presence of MDMA, for example, or does it test for adulterants as well?
Oh, that's a really important question. So free, confidential, you can't get in trouble. Those things are really important. And then the other thing is, if you get a reagent test that you buy through Cosmic Corner or the Hemp Store, etc., it's useful. It can tell you the presence of MDMA, but it won't tell you what else is in there. And that's where our drug checking service does tell you what else is in the substance. So you'll have a very good idea, not of the strength of the drug, but you will know what is in it. So if it turns out to not be MDMA or it's a mixture of MDMA and some other things, you will find out from giving us a very tiny, tiny sample to test exactly what it is so that then you can make informed decisions about what you do.
How can people use MDMA responsibly from a harm reduction perspective?
Well, really, so first of all, start with getting your drugs checked, just repeating that over and over. And if you can't access drug checking, try the reagent test from the Hemp Store or Cosmic Corner anyway. Then the other things I would be really aware of is that alcohol mixed with MDMA, which I think people do relatively commonly, particularly if it turns out to be dimethylpentylone, it can mask the effects of the stimulant and make you quite unwell later on. So I'd be careful about mixing with any other substance, and alcohol in particular, I wouldn't leave that off the list. And if you are somebody who's on antidepressants or anti-anxiety meds, I'd also be very careful with MDMA because they work on a very similar part of the body.
Is it possible to overdose on MDMA?
Very rarely. It has to be incredibly potent. But this dimethylpentylone, if indeed it is dimethylpentylone, it is possible to overdose on very large amounts and for that overdose to be fatal.
Finally, do you mind just repeating the upcoming drug testing clinics that you've got going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So always you can see our drug checking clinics on www.level.org.nz or follow our Instagram or Facebook. But also we have specific clinics coming up in Auckland tomorrow night, 3 to 7pm in Albert Park, and on Saturday from 3 to 5 at Neck of the Woods.
That was the NZ Drug Foundation's Executive Director, Sarah Helm, on the recent hospitalizations in the Hawke's Bay and MDMA.
That was The Wire.
Ko rā te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki au mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on the Wednesday Wire, everybody. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. Professor Boyd Swinburne, co-chair of Health Coalition Aotearoa, Joe Carolyn, organiser with the Unite Union of the Tax the Rich protest, Jessica Walker from Consumer New Zealand, Matt Lowry from Greater Auckland, Sarah Helm from the New Zealand Drug Foundation. Nei rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. And on a little side note, this is my last Wednesday Wire here at 95BFM. I am moving to the United States at the end of this week to start my undergraduate studies at Yale University. But hopefully this won't be the last time that I'll be here on your airwaves. But until then, thank you very much to the BFM team and for you listening to me on the Wednesday Wire. I wish you all the best. Have a great afternoon and keep it here on 95 BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.